Hello there, everyone, and welcome along to this Monday Racing Postcast. It's Monday, the 7th of June. Summer is fast approaching, although you'll notice I've got rather nasally tones today. So today's guests, Lee Mottershead and Tom Collins, are going to have to put up with that, as well as you. I'm very sorry about it. But we did have some amazing action on track, particularly at Epsom over the last couple of days. So if that's not enough to cheer you up and really get your blood pumping for the rest of the flat season, then I'm not sure what is. So we're going to have a look back on all the big performances from Epsom. That's what's coming up. And some talking points as well that I want to start off with. So let's just go through them now. Lee, let's go to you first, as you were at Epsom. Now, a lot was made, particularly on Friday, of the ground because of the rain that the course had received. And as well, people were criticising because the track had been watered. And even on Saturday, there were a number of subsequent non-runners, for instance, Mahafeth in the Derby. What was your take on Andrew Cooper and the way he managed the track over the last couple of days?
My take on it, Maddie, would be that it was the weather. I would have no criticism of Andrew Cooper whatsoever. I think within that sector, criticising Andrew Cooper would be akin to saying that Aidan O'Brien or John Gosser don't know how to train horses. He's done that job for so long, and I'd say Epsom is one of the trickiest tracks to manage. I think he's got an exemplary record doing it. I think he looked at the forecast last week and he watered the racecourse according to what the forecast looked like. And I mean, put simply, it wasn't meant to rain as long on Friday as it did. In fact, when I spoke to him, probably about 9:30, 10 a.m. on Friday morning, by which point it had been raining for about an hour or so, Andrew was actually really happy because he felt that that would make the decision for him regarding Saturday, that it would mean there would be no watering needed on Friday evening. But the fact that at 10 a.m. he couldn't guarantee he wouldn't need to water after racing on Friday just underlines, I think, the fact that the amount of rain that we had through the day just wasn't in the forecast. It couldn't have been predicted. So I thought it was a shame how much rain we had. It clearly impacted on the 2 days to an extent, but personally I would have zero criticism of Andrew Cooper for the way he handled things during the week.
Okay, if we're not criticizing Andrew Cooper, what about some of the trainers that pulled their horses out, and particularly on Saturday, I'm on about here, TC, because the times, I mean, even Oh This Is Us, you know, he's a pretty fast ground horse, his record suggests that. What do you make of some of the reasons people were giving for pulling out horses, such as, you know, William Haggis, he'd made a case saying that this horse couldn't handle softer ground, and understandably he didn't want to take the risk. But do you think that was sort of a legitimate excuse given the evidence we have?
I mean, beforehand, the ground on Friday looked bad, didn't it? It was all cut up on the rail. I know, obviously, it was railed off some way off the rail, looking towards Saturday's card. And it did come standside for a few of the races. So on that evidence, I can understand why the trainers withdrew some of their horses. There was quite a few non-runners, weren't there? As you mentioned, Mohafeth, Maximal as well in the Diamed, a couple early on in the handicaps. But at the same time, you can't. None of these trainers are clairvoyants. They're doing the best, in their opinion, for their horse. I watched an interview with William Haggis when, I think it was on ITV, when he just announced that Mohafeth was out, and he looked gutted. He looked absolutely gutted that the horse wasn't likely to handle the conditions. Whether Mohafeth would have handled the conditions and therefore won the Derby, finished placed in the Derby, Haggis thought he did the right decision at the time. You've got to do best by the horse. And if that's the decision he made, then that's the decision we've got to put up with.
It certainly is. Now, one of the big stories this week that I feel like hasn't necessarily garnered as much attention as perhaps we would have expected is the case of Stephen Marne, Lee. What can you tell listeners about the sad news that's come from Ireland this week?
Yeah, so, and it's a desperately, desperately sad story, really, because of what's happened with the horses involved. I have to say, Maddie, he's not a trainer I know a huge deal about. He's based in County Galway, but he was last week banned from training for 4 years by the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board. That was in relation to an inspection of his yard, where they found a number of horses to be in a very poor state indeed. One horse was subsequently euthanized. There was great concern about the condition of some of the horses. The same trainer had been involved in a previous instance in 2008 when he was fined €1,000 and suspended for 4 months over the case of a mare called Pike Bridge. And I referenced this in my column on in today's Racing Post. It's meant to be a Derby column. I thought it was so big, I had to make reference to it. This poor mare, Pike Bridge, in 2008, and this isn't pleasant listening, but she was neglected to such an extent that in an attempt to alleviate excruciating pain in her tendons, she ate at her own legs, rendering unable to stand and causing her to lie down for 12 weeks before being put down. So this is a trainer who has had previous. The punishment he received for the first case clearly didn't change his behaviour sufficiently. An appeal looks set to be lodged. I think as we stand now, I don't believe appeal has been lodged, but an appeal will be lodged. From reading the material that's been available to us and IHOB material too, it seems like much of his claim, if you like, is related to procedural matters regarding the investigation, as opposed to the facts that the investigation relates to. You're right, Matt, it's not garnered the coverage that, for example, the Gordon Elliott incident did. And this is clearly far, far worse than the Gordon Elliott case. This involves live animals being put through neglect that should never be the case. We'll see what happens with the appeal. It's a 4-year ban. There's no guarantee he'd be allowed back after that. And I don't think many people in the racing industry in Britain or Ireland would ever want to see this man training racehorses again.
No. And often with these processes and these incidents, we talk about the punishments, if you like. A 4-year ban, it's hard to say, but do you think that is sufficient for what this trainer's done?
No. I would never want to see this man training racehorses again. If I was an owner and I had a horse, he's the last person in the world I would want to see training or having responsibility for the care of my horse. I thought there was a particularly telling line in the IHOB findings, which spoke about, yes, some of the horses in his training barn apparently were in grand condition, but they said that those horses from whom he wasn't going to benefit financially, he either could not or would not give them the care that they deserved. So it's a 4-year ban. My expectation is that even if he applied again in 4 years' time, he would not get his license back. But he should not get his license back. He should not be training in the future.
And does this case, do you think, highlight any fragilities with, you know, whether it be looking into yards and undercovering cases like this? Do you think there's something we can do going forward, or indeed that the IHRB can do going forward to make sure this doesn't happen again? Because it's truly dreadful.
It is truly dreadful. I suppose one, my goodness, trying to find blessings in a case like this is difficult. But I guess one good thing is they did catch him, in a sense. They did. An investigation did find what was going on. Now, of course, what you want is for it not to go on in the first place. I don't know enough about the wider situation to know if this is reflective of any cultural issues or if there's a wider problem at play. I very much doubt it. Ireland is a land that loves horses. As a nation, they're a horse-loving nation, and I'm sure that everyone in Irish racing is as appalled as we are. But I think these random checks, these unannounced checks, are a very good thing. And I think anyone who is doing wrong is more likely to be caught if they don't know that the person doing an investigation is going to turn up when they turn up. So, and I'd say with anything like this, if you have nothing to hide, then you should have no problem with people knocking on your door and asking to see your premises.
Yeah, Indeed. And from one very, very sad story to one a little bit bittersweet, just before we move into reviewing the action, TC, I wanted to get a quick word on the Tin Man, who's been retired after suffering what seems like quite a bad injury working on the gallops in preparation for a run at Salisbury. Just a fantastic sprinter. He had that longevity we often see with these top class horses. Group one winner, danced every dance, as the cliche goes, and hopefully it'd be great to see him, you know, not on a race course again, but hopefully with a new life as a hack, and he'll hopefully be a familiar face for many years to come around Newmarket.
Yeah, an absolutely phenomenal horse. He's been the flag bearer for James Fanshawe for a number of seasons. He cost just $80,000 as a yearling back in 2013, and he earned almost $1.3 million. A phenomenal horse. He was a stalwart in the 6 furlong division. He won multiple Group 1 races, including at Haydock on heavy ground and on good to firm ground at Ascot, which just showed his versatility. It's sad that we're not going to see him on the track again, but look, he was a great horse. And you know what? It was a blessing in disguise that he was gelded after his first run, because we've managed to witness the Tin Man race for 8 years now. And you know, it's a sad story that he's been retired, but his legacy will live for a long time.
Fantastic, lovely words there. Now we've finished with the criticism and some of the not so nice stories that happened in racing this week. Let's get on to the good stuff. And Friday at Epsom, there was the Coronation Cup, the Group One, over a mile and a half. And this is perhaps one of my favourite flat racing results in an awfully long time, Lee. Pile Driver won for Martin Dwyer and the new partnership, William Muir and Chris Grassick, training him. He beat Al Arzi for a really memorable success. It was a daring inside run, and he fought back in the closing stages to win a first Group One. What does this story mean to not just to Chris and William and Martin, who have, you know, plied their trade brilliantly in the industry for a number of years, but I think this is a really refreshing success. What do you think it's going to resonate? Why does this story resonate so much with people?
Well, you like it, Maddie. I like it. A lot of people like it because a lot of us are romantics, and we like to see in a sport like flat racing, which is largely dominated by superpower stables who tend to monopolize the major races, or certainly to an extent. It's great to see other people winning. William, so he'd gone 30 years without training a Group One winner, which shows you how hard it is for someone like that to get involved in these sort of contests. This was his first Group One winner. Martin Dwyer has now won the 3 Group One races at Epsom, but his Derby and Oaks wins came a long time ago, 2003 and 2006. And I thought his comments after the race were really striking, where he spoke about how sometimes you can hate this sport and how it can be very, very difficult indeed to get amongst the big wins and the big horses. Even a horse where your father-in-law trains the horse, you're always wondering, you know, will I lose a ride on this horse to a fancier name? Well, that didn't happen. They're a great combination, and his horse that people like because he's slightly unpredictable. He doesn't always run his race, and even at Epsom, in the closing stage, the head went to one side. It looked like he was trying to have a conversation with a lassie entering the final furlong, but he did battle. It was a super performance from him. And I think as well, just going back to Martin Dwight, it was a super ride too. The plan had been to make the running. That didn't materialise because Highland Chief went off at a decent gap clip and Martin followed him. But I thought halfway through, Martin rushed Pile Driver into the lead. It was quite a dramatic move. And he explained afterwards, because he knows that Pile Driver can wander under pressure by getting him on the rail, he knew that when he was challenged, he would only have one. Well, he wouldn't have anywhere to go. You know, he'd be stuck there, and that worked really well. So I thought the next performance from him looks like he won't now go to the Hardwick Stakes, which had been on his agenda. He's had a hard race there, and William Muir was saying this morning that he would like to give him a bit more time. So the King George would come next for him. Alassi, yeah, I think William Haggis was a bit disappointed because the horse didn't win, and for a long time he'd been an odds-on favourite. He didn't appear to do much wrong. He made a big move around the outside, looked set to swamp Pile Driver and go on and win. In the end, he was worried out of it. He's a horse who's not had that many battles. So in some ways, I think this race will actually do good. I think he'll benefit from having got down and dirty at Epsom, and I still think he's potentially a very good horse. The others in the race, well, the two Ballydore horses were a bit disappointing. Again, Japan, well, Moga was desperately disappointing. Japan was disappointing too, and they've neither horse has ever really quite hit the heights that I think we once thought they would do, even though between them they've won lots of big races. But this was very much a race that Pile Driver, I think he dominated. His success was great to see.
It was. And just quickly before I move over to TC, what do you think a win for this co-partnership could mean? Could you see more trainers doing it in future? Why do you think this has been such a good move?
I think it's a great idea. It's something that's happened in other jurisdictions before. I'm a big fan of Australian racing. In Australia, it's nothing new. You know, for a while, you had the Hayes team there. They had three names on the license. They're back down to two now. I think it's a great thing. I think in a lot of ways, it makes sense. We know that a lot of these stables, there isn't one person who is completely in charge. And if two people, in effect, have joint responsibility for running the business, then why shouldn't those two names be on the license? I can see why in the past there have been questions about it. I think mainly for regulatory issues. You know, if one person is deemed to have done something very wrong, does that complicate matters in terms of regulating an offence? But I think logically, it's a really good thing, and I'm sure more people will do it. And heck, the biggest trainer in this country, John Gosden, has done it and joined forces with his son, Thady. So I think we will see it more often, and I think it's a great thing.
Fantastic. TC, from a form perspective, Pile Driver, do you think we could see him back up this in a race like a King George? That's where they've suggested they'll go next.
Well, I'm not as much of as a romantic as you two. I wanted Al Azi to win purely because I think he's the leading light of the staying division. He didn't manage to get by Pile Driver. Well, actually, he did. He went half a length up at one stage, but Pile Driver fought back. I thought personally the ride from Jim Crowley wasn't A1. If I was riding Al Azi, I know he may have hung down the canvas slightly. But he didn't change his lead.
If you were riding Al Azi, that's something I'd love to see.
I wouldn't be riding for that long, I tell you. I'd be off after about a furlong. That might be optimistic as well. But look, he failed to change his legs about three furlongs out and therefore hung down into Pile Driver, which really helped him. He's a very wayward horse, Pile Driver, can hang left and right. And as Lee mentioned, a great ride by Martin Dwyer to manage to get towards the rail to basically eliminate half the ways he could go. He could only go right, but Al Azi and Jim Crowley came in, boxed him in against the rail, and therefore he ran in a straight line. I wanted Al Azi to win. I thought Japan and Mogul beforehand were ridiculously unreliable and inconsistent, and they just proved that again. I wouldn't be backing those at all in any races going forward. I wouldn't be backing Pile Driver either because I thought he got his ideal circumstances. I think Al Azi's horse to take out of the race, but I'm slightly disappointed they didn't win.
So this podcast, you're getting the romantic and the wonderful musings of Lee, and then you've also got the hard, cold-headed sort of punting head of Tom. You've got the best of both worlds here. And onwards, we'll see what they thought to the Kazoo Oaks, which was won in devastating fashion, 16 lengths, in fact, by Snowfall under Frankie Dettori for Aidan O'Brien. The trainer equaled the record for numbers of British classic successes. So it was a really momentous win in that respect. Visually, this looked very impressive, Tom. Was it as good as it looked, do you think?
Well, I think the race fell apart in behind Snowfall, but take nothing away from her. She has produced an incredible performance, drawing 16 lengths clear, the widest margin that we've ever seen in a classic, or potentially in a Group 1, I think, over here. And she achieved an RPR of 123, which is £1 better than what Love did last year. And it was the same race post rating as Enable achieved in 2017. So it was a phenomenal effort. The figures, her final sectionals under Frankie Dettori's ride, just hands and heels ride as well, and stack up nicely as well. So take nothing away from the favourite. However, looking back in the field, I mean, Mystery Angel, who I don't think stayed, but ran a great race, I have to say, for George Bowie and Ben Curtis and the Nick Bradley team. She finished second, and she was up there from a long way. They didn't go slow early. So the fact that she managed to hold on for second suggests that those in behind didn't necessarily run their races. Divinely was the only horse to come down the centre of the track. She finished off really nicely. She's clearly got a stamina-laden pedigree, and she just stayed better than the rest. Santa Barbara, very disappointing, as predicted, I think. I don't even think Aidan O'Brien and the Ballador team necessarily know who the best of their fillies is, or Colts, when they come into the Derby and Oaks, because this seems to happen year on year. But she was very disappointing. I wouldn't imagine they'll be sticking to a mile four with her back in trip, maybe. She made a nice move, but seemed to flatten out dramatically. But look, Snowfall's a really, really exciting filly. She seemed to be in the mould of Love last year. She was running in all the same two-year-old races as Love did. And she's shown dramatic improvement in two starts as a three-year-old. Whether she can go and win the Arc, I know she was put in as joint favourite, I think, after her Oaks victory. Well, that's another matter. But she's very exciting and the leading filly in the division so far.
It's an interesting point you mentioned there about, you know, horses being second strings, first strings, whatever. Because now we've had Mother Earth in the 1,000 guineas. We had Max Winnie winning the Irish 2,000 guineas. We've now had Snowfall winning this race as seemingly the second string. It does stack up. Perhaps they don't really know where they stand, Lee. What would your view on that be?
Oh, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, you look at Ballydoyle's classic winners the last few years and how many of them haven't been ridden by Ryan Moore. And I don't think that's any reflection on Ryan Moore. It's more the fact that these are largely unexposed three-year-olds who are still finding improvement at various rates of knots, and they can't be sure which ones are the best going into races, which I think is generally often why Ballydoyle have tended to run five, six, seven horses in the Derby, because they don't know going into a race which one is going to be the best. I'm sure they weren't expecting in recent years Wings of Eagles, Anthony Van Dyke and Serpentine to emerge as the best horse in their respective derbies. I think that is the case. And, you know, I think we'll talk about the Derby again later on, but that Pride 8 provides another perfect point. Read the subject at hand.
It does. And if you were interested, Snowfall now favourite for the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe. So I'm going to read out some prices for you just so we know where we stand. We will talk about some of those a bit further down in the market later on in the show. But Snowfall, roughly 5-1, Love 7s, Mishriff 9s, Tanawa 10s, St Mark's Basilica, who won the Prix de Jockey Club on Sunday, also 10s, as well as Adyar, the Derby winner. Contrail, Japanese representation at 12s, and the rest are 16-1 bar. Before we wrap it up on Snowfall, let's talk about the achievement of Aidan O'Brien, Lee, because it's almost so momentous, it's not even seemed to capture many headlines, but what he's achieved is remarkable, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 40 British Classic victories is just crazy, isn't it? I mean, it's utterly crazy. And he still looks like he's in his mid-30s. You know, goodness knows how many he'll have when he finally decides to put his feet up and have a rest. It's an astonishing achievement. What's interesting this season, and this sort of preempts Derby chat to a little bit, is that whilst he's got a very, very good horse in Snowfall, and indeed, you know, Mother Earth won the 1,000 guineas, I think with the Colts, they're the three-year-old Colts, I think largely at Ballydoyle, they're a bit below par this year. You've got St Mark's Basilica, who again we'll talk about won the Prix de Jockey Club. But I think that there is maybe not quite the strength in depth among the classic band there this season. And yet, he's won the 1,000 guineas, he's won the Oaks, and he's won the Prix de Jockey Club. So even in a year when you might argue that there aren't as many really good three-year-olds in there, he's still winning lots of big races. And Snowfall is just an example, again, of with Aidan O'Brien's horses, you shouldn't really give up on those that take a while to blossom. You look at Snowfall's form figures last season, and you said there's absolutely no chance she'd be a horse who would win an Oaks, let alone by 60 lengths, the widest margin of any Epsom Classic winner ever. He is an astonishing trainer, and trying to dismiss him or indeed any of his horses at any time is enormously stupid.
Yeah, and another sort of advertisement for the the global sort of mind of breeding, given that she was by Deep Impact, who's the sort of sadly no longer with us, but the preeminent sire in Japan, who's carved out a legacy all of his own. And that's a legacy that lives on. Now, although the margin of victory might have been quite surprising, the result in Snowfall winning perhaps wasn't, yet in the Derby, I think a lot of us were surprised. So stick with us to find out more about what happened.
With Members Club Ultimate, you'll get unlimited access to the Racing Post digital newspaper, exclusive Royal Ascot tips from the likes of Tom Segal and Paul Keighley, plus much more, including access to our award-winning journalism, video replays for UK and Ireland, and our horse tracker. Use code ASCOT21, that's ASCOT21, to get 50% off for your first 3 months.
Okay, before we get into the Derby review, we also had some good racing on Saturday at Epsom. And let's give a quick mention to the Diomed Stakes. It was won in thrilling fashion by Oh This Is Us under Tom Marcon for Richard Hannon. As good as ever at just 8 years old, a real stalwart of the game, a real favourite TC. 18-1 he returned, the second time he'd upset his odds this season. How do you think he managed it? Because it didn't look likely for a long way.
No, he's a phenomenal horse. Richard Hannon's done a great job with him, and he's just always under bet. He always goes off a big price. This year in how many runs has he had? 7. He's gone off at 20-1, 16-1, 14-1, 22-1, 66 when he won at Ascot, 22-1, and then 18 on Saturday. He's always thought of as the underdog in his races, but he always runs good races. Managed to get up on the wire by a tongue. I've never seen it before. He won by a tongue. Tom Marcand obviously shouted in his ear, stick your tongue out, and he did so. He gets on really well with Tom Marcand as well. Both victories this year under him. Century Dream, who's the reliable horse in the Diomed, won it in 2018, won it in 2020. He was a close-up second, so it gives the form a strong look. Bell Rock, who was well punted back in third as well. A brilliant story and a brilliant horse.
Indeed. And then let's talk about the Whirlpool Dash, which provided us with a 25-1 winner in Mockatiel. Although not that surprising, because he did like this track. Only spoofing TC was our selection. He could only finish second, Stone of Destiny in third, and Mondamej in fourth. What was your analysis of this race?
Well, Copper Knight, out of the gates, was as quick as I've ever seen a horse, but he didn't have the same early strides as the eventual pacemakers in that race. I thought the unlucky horses back in the field were Lord Riddiford and Stone of Destiny. Lord Riddiford was out in the middle of the track, took a bump early, short of room, finished fifth. Stone of Destiny couldn't get a run under Sylvester D'Souza, finished third. Only spoofing around a good race for us in second. But that turn of foot from Mockatiel, he just went by the front runners in about 5 strides, and it was game over from there. Another great ride by David Egan. First victory at Epsom, coming in the dash. Not many jockeys can say that. He ran off just off 8 stone 4 as well. So the lightweight clearly helped. High draws dominated, as usual, in the dash. Very thrilling race. Unfortunately, the wrong result for us, but take nothing away from Mockatiel.
We'll get them next time. Don't worry, we will. Impressive winner of the dash, wasn't it? By a length and a half. That seems quite a lot for the dash. Good weekend for David Egan. Now let's move on to the big one. The Kazoo Derby was won by Adiar at 16-1, supported beforehand from as big as 50s. And this was another win in the Derby for Charlie Appleby after Massar's success. And crucially for Adam Kirby, who had earlier been jocked up to ride John Leaper. But then Frankie Dettori came in for that ride. The jockey actually had something to do with breaking this horse in. So although he'd never rode him on track before, clearly knew him quite well. He wasn't good enough to win one of the trials, although did run well behind Alan Kerr at Sandown in second when an eye catcher, and then again behind My Fancy Third Realm at Lingfield. Lee, somebody clearly saw this coming for the late market move. Was it you?
Well, you know, I have to admit, Maddie, I did have a bit each way at 40-1. Late in the morning, and it's not really my work, but I was sat very close to our ace photographer, Edward Whittaker, who is very, very good at taking pictures, and it turns out at predicting Derby winners, because he was saying to me he thought Adiar was a big prize. So I went back and looked at the Lingfield Derby trial again, and gee, it's weird, I've watched that race umpteen times, but looking at it, I thought, do you know, maybe he's right, the horse was finishing really well, he's a big horse, could improve. So a small bet each way at 40s. But as I say, wasn't my work. It was Edward Whittaker. He deserves the credit. And then when I saw him in the paddock, my goodness me, he is the most gorgeous individual. He looked fantastic, but he just takes the eye so much. And I don't know if the gamble was in any way linked to how well he looked. because it was a massive move. But bearing in mind how good a looking horse he is, bearing in mind his physical improvement, bearing in mind his form improvement and how well he won there, I think he's a good Derby winner. I thought this was a really impressive display at Epsom. He got a great ride, and I think it's certainly the case that had Adam Kirby not made that move between gear up and the rail around 2.5 furlongs out, the horse probably wouldn't have won. At the time, I didn't think that was the case. Well, he would have won regardless. But then when you look at the ITV overhead blimp shots, there wasn't much room around him. If he had to take him back, a big horse like that, the momentum that had been lost, that could have been curtains. So he got a great ride, but he was really impressive. When he went through that gap, he quickened very immediately, put the race to bed quickly. And I think he's good. I think, you know, that the previous four Derby winners, none of them ever won another race thereafter. And the previous one only won a single race. I think Adia will buck that trend. I think if he goes to the Irish Derby, I think he'll beat, he'll beat High Definition and the horse he defeated Epsom on Saturday. I don't think he's the sort of horse that they'll want to be dropping back to a mile and a quarter. I think he's a mile and a half horse who will excel at a mile and a half, and they might want to go into the St. Ledger afterwards. But I like him. I know you can say he's beaten a maiden into second, but that maiden Mojo Star clearly found plenty of improvement. As I said earlier on, these are three-year-olds. They're developing. They will hit growth spurts, I think, improvement spurts. I think that's what we saw. So although some of the horses in behind didn't run their race, I think we have a good above-average Derby winner who I think, unusually for recent Derby winners, will win more races.
Brilliant. Optimism then from Lee. And I really like Adyar as well. What does it mean for the form, TT? Let's get really stuck into this. Mojo Star, you know, surprising that he managed to finish second, although I get from Richard Hannon's comments, he wasn't that surprised. Hurricane Lane, he lost both of his front shoes. I know that's something that you find interesting and you don't take lightly. Max Swinney, Kevin Manning thought he might not have handled the ground. Third Realm ran really well, but it seemed he just didn't get the rub of the green early on. Bolshoi Ballet got struck into, as did the second Mojo Star. And John Leeper, Frankie Dettori, just saying this was too far for him at this stage of his career. What was your main takeout from the race? Who's the horse to look for going forward, do you think?
Well, I think just to mention Adia, I think he was very impressive. He could easily go and win the St. Ledger now. He's definitely a St. Ledger horse. The fact he managed to win the Derby puts a different perplexion. It makes you look at the race in reflection more. I think he'll put it up to High Definition at Doncaster. Looking back at the field, as you say, Mojo Star finished second. You never really want to see a maiden finish second in a Derby, do you? However, he did bump into a really nice sort last time in Manobo at Newbury, who's probably going to go on to great things, I imagine, for Godolphin. He's by Sea of the Stars. He was going to improve for the trip. I wouldn't say that the fact that Mojo Star finished second is a negative when you're looking at the form by any means. And then Hurricane Lane back in third, lost by front shoes. He's worthy of more than the finishing distance suggests. Beaten 7.75 lengths. He's better horse than that. I reckon he was the second best horse in the race, Hurricane Lane. I would also be keeping him in my tracker going forward. McSwinney, I can't believe Kevin Manning said he didn't like the ground. I mean, what was it, too quick? He's won on heavy, soft. The ground was testing out there. It was perfect for McSwinney. I know it was, the times suggest it was quicker than the good to soft it says. But it was good to soft ground and it's fine. I think that's fine for him. Third Realm, who beat Adyar at Lingfield. He was just too keen early. There are plenty of excuses for the beaten horses. Bolshoi Ballet had a bad cut on his leg as well. The connection said that he got struck into after 150 yards, but I've watched the replay at least 10 times. I didn't get to see the race live, incidentally. I was on the M3 at the time. Watched the race at least 10 times. I can't see where his right hind leg was struck into after 150 yards. So, I mean, that's by the by, but that's what the vet report said anyway. John Leeper as well made his move at the wrong point. So the form has a decent look to it, but I'd also forgive a few of those disappointing horses in behind. I think the winner's pretty good, like Lee.
7-2 for the St. Ledger, if you're interested, Adyar. Perhaps we'll see him at the Curragh. Before then, a cruel question for you, TC, before we move on to the French action. Where do you think Mahartheth would have finished?
Well, it depends how quick the ground was. I mean, the times, as I say, they're pretty decent. I mean, 6 seconds quicker than the Oaks. Previous day, I know, obviously, Colts versus Phillies, but the ground suggested it was a lot quicker, which would have suited Mahathir. It's really hard to say Wade would have finished. I don't think he would have won the race, let's just say that.
Okay, now Lee, over to you for the Prix de Jockey Club review. It was won by St Mark's Basilica, a second win in 2 years for Iritz Mendizabal. Again, Aidan O'Brien coming to the fore. And this horse won really easily, a half-brother to Magna Grecia. He has the pedigree. His jockey suggests he thinks a mile and a half will be no problem in the arc. What did you make of this performance and where would you go next?
I would go for the Eclipse, Maddie. I know the jockey said, as you said, that he thought the horse would get a mile and a half, no doubt about it. I don't think that can be guaranteed. He might well get a mile and a half, but that Prix du Jockey Club, for me, looked more of a speed test than a stamina test. I thought he was given a super ride. He was prominent. He was in just the right place to kick on the top of the straight. The horse really accelerated, a bit like Adyar in the Derby. He put the race to bed very quickly indeed. And I think he's a horse who, over a mile and a quarter, will continue very hard to beat. You know, he's won the two French classics now, the Poulain and the Prix du Jockey Club. He looks a star, 10 furlong horse. He's progressing. He was a great two-year-old too, won the Dewhurst Stakes. There's nothing not to like about St Mark's Basilica, even allowing for the swishy tail. Under pressure.
You've stolen my point there, because I don't like horses who do that. What's your view on it?
Well, I've got it. I have to be honest, Maddie, I have never given too much thought to the subject of tail swishing. I think visually it can be a little bit disturbing, but it would need a far greater data mine than mine. Someone like TC to actually go through the stats read tail swishing horses to find out if it impacts performance. Obviously, you often find horses maybe that have got a bit of character, they get a smack and the tail swishes. But it didn't seem to be stopping him. And certainly, if he can go that fast with his tail swishing, maybe if his tail didn't swish, he'd go even faster. But it's not something that's worrying me.
Okay. A lot of good horses do it. Sea of Class did it, I remember, as a young filly. TC, good or bad tail swishing? Does it bother you or not?
I think aesthetically, as Lee said, it's not the most pleasing thing to witness, but I don't think it stops the horse. I mean, I've never seen a horse that swishes their tail and solely does that as a negative trait and then stop running. They seem to always continue to run at a reasonable fast gallop. It wouldn't put me off, let's just say that.
There you are. I'm talking rubbish. Cheshire Academy caught the eye of those in behind. There was no look for the British Raiders, Derab, Magellan and El Drama. So we'll hope for better next time. Now, it's a quiet week coming up, but hold no fear because we're going to get some best bets for this week and also a Royal Ascot fancy. So stay with us for the final part of the show.
With Members Club Ultimate, you'll get unlimited access to the Racing Post digital newspaper, exclusive Royal Ascot tips from the likes of Tom Segal and Paul Keeley, plus much more, including access to our award-winning journalism, video replays for UK and Ireland, and our horse tracker. Use code ASCOT21, that's ASCOT21, to get 50% off for your first 3 months.
Yes, lots of listed action this week and some really good contests, I'm sure, but not necessarily a real highlight. Who have you keeping your eye on this week, Lee? I'll go to you first. What's caught your eye in the entries?
Well, it's a bit tricky, Maddie, because as we're speaking, we've not yet seen the entries for Saturday. You're pretty quiet. Saturday, Sandown, York and Chester, the main meetings. The York card includes that big valuable three-year-old six furlong handicap. There's always a standout race on that card. A race that used to take place on the Saturday at York has been moved to the Friday, the Ganton Stakes, a listed race over a mile. I'd be keen to see Top Rank running in that race. This Is Us is in there, but I wouldn't have thought he'll turn out that quickly. Mom's Tipple is in it as well, back on the race course where he won by about 38 lengths in a juvenile sales race a couple of years ago. The horse I'd be keen to see on York on Friday is Amethyst. Another William Haggis trained horse has won three of his four starts so far. Showed a good attitude at Newmarket last time. Is in the Hunt Cup, but doesn't look like the horse will get in the Hunt Cup. So maybe we'll go to York on Friday. But it's certainly it's a quiet week, Maddie. As you'd expect, the week before Royal Ascot, we've got so much to look forward to next week. This week is sort of just crossing the days off until we get to Ascot.
It is, and it's a good opportunity to have a look back and refresh your mind about the races and the horses that are going to be running at the Royal Meeting. TC, you're going to be no doubt very busy this week, but have you got a best bet for the next 7 days?
Yeah, well, I've only managed to look at tomorrow's race in Tuesday at this stage. Currently writing my column, in the process of doing so, but only up to Tuesday. And my nap for the paper is going to be Marouge in the 2:45 at Salisbury for Roger Varian, Andrea Ratzani. Last year, she burnt a lot of money. She was beaten 11-10 on debut, then even second time up, 5-2 favourite on handicap debut, fourth on each of those three occasions. But she just needed more, basically a longer trip. She seemed pretty one-paced. She had a 65-day break after that handicap debut at Yarmouth. She ran at Chepstow in August. I think I was in the Sky Studios that day, and I opposed her. I was saying that she's burnt money. She basically is a horse that you can't trust. And she went up and won by a length and a quarter. She was very impressive off the mark of 65. We saw her once since then, 13 days later at Newmarket. She was struck into from behind. She was pulled up. So we didn't actually get to see how well handicapped she was up under a £7 penalty. She's now coming back after a long layoff. It looks a pretty weak race, I have to say, at Salisbury. There's Elegant Erin in their first time blinkers. Rock and Magico finished second last time at Yarmouth, but there isn't much substance in there. I think Marouge can return with a win in the 2:45 at Salisbury on Tuesday.
Thank you very much. Fantastic. And now, given we are talking all things Royal Ascot, what do you think of the week coming up, Lee? And who's your main fancy if I had to, if you had to pin down one horse to follow at this stage?
Well, I can't wait, Maddie. I always love Royal Ascot. I took my morning coat into the dry cleaners this morning, having used it at Epsom on Saturday. So I shall be in all my finery. It's a joy to behold, Maddie, as I'm sure you'd agree. I can't wait. I love Royal Ascot. I love the sustained excellence, a bit like Cheltenham. Every race matters. It's going to be a different sort of Royal Ascot too this year, isn't it? With seven races every day. I know last year was different because of COVID, and they added lots of new races on. But from now, we have a permanent addition of a fifth race every day, which means we go until 6:10 every day at Royal Ascot, 2:30 through to 6:10. So long old days, should be marvellous. I've only backed one horse so far. That will change. The horse I backed is a filly trained by Simon and Ed Crisford, who I saw win a novice race at Goodwood on debut a couple of weeks ago, called Floatus. She was 9-1 introduced straight after that race. That didn't last long. She's now 4-1, 9-2. It's probably a bit silly of me, really, back in a juvenile that far up for Ascot, because at that point we didn't know what Wesley Ward would be bringing, and TC will know far more than I would do about what Wesley's Albany filly might be. But you're always worried about that, and Aidan's bound to have a smart horse in there. But I thought Floatus was tremendously impressive with the way she won that race that day. They spoke glowingly about her afterwards too, so they clearly rated her. They'd been thinking of the Albany before that race. So for me, Floatus in the Albany Stakes is the only anti-post I've had so far.
You take note when Lee Mottershead says something like that. Now, you say about TC and his involvement with Wesley Ward and his love of his horses, but I've actually banned him from putting a Wesley Ward horse up here because he did it last time. So I can't have the same selection for Royal Ascot twice. And I am granted going to give him chance to mention the Belmont Stakes that he asked me to sort of fling to him before we started recording. But before we do, who is that second Royal Ascot fancy, TC?
Yeah, well, I can't mention it, but I'm going to say Ruthin's still my nap in the Queen Mary. I've only had two anti-post bets, and they're both favourites. So, look, there's nothing original here. But in the King Edward VII Stakes, Bay Bridge, for Sir Michael Stout, he's won the race seven times in the past. He targets this race with his best three-year-olds. Bay Bridge was so impressive in the London Gold Cup. Undoubtedly, in my opinion, every year the best three-year-old handicap leading into Ascot. Beat a horse called King Frankel, who was really unlucky not to do the... to get the job done at Epsom on Saturday, on Friday, sorry, when, or was it Saturday? Saturday went second. Oz Legend, who finished fourth in that race, runs today. So we're yet to know the result. Hopefully he'll boost the form. But Baybridge, I know he's favourite, but he's a worthy favourite in the King Edward VII.
And a quick word on the Belmont Stakes then, because it was won by Godolphin. Fantastic couple of hours for them. And they won another race with Summer Romance as well out stateside.
Yeah, you won't see many better Saturdays for an ownership than Godolphin had this Saturday. They won the Derby with Adea. They won with Alfica in the Grade One, just a game at Belmont.
Ah, then sorry, you've got me there. Alfica beat them.
Second. That's it.
Yeah.
And Essential Quality won the Belmont. If we get races like the Belmont at Royal Ascot, then you know what, every horse racing fan and neutral will be over the moon, because that Belmont Stakes was one of the best races I've ever seen. You won't see many better runner-up efforts than Hot Rod Charlie gave as well. He went 22 and 3/5 seconds through the first quarter. That's a sprinter's pace over a mile, 4 furlongs, and he was beaten just over a length. There were 15 lengths clear of Preakness winner Ron Bauer. It was a brilliant race between two fantastic three-year-olds and Essential Qualities leading the division. He looks a horse to win at the Breeders' Cup as well.
Super. It's a good job we've got experts like you two leading this show and not me. Thank you very much, both of you.
Far too hard on yourself.
Too hard.
I've never been expert before, but thank you.
Oh, very much. You are very much so, Lee. And on that note, we'll bid you goodbye. Thank you both for your insight and for joining us. Hopefully, we've found you all some winners, and we'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.